morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and the fastest growing segment of our society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful, it is caring. No one knows this better than our Friday first hour guest. He is IQ Al-Rasuli. It is a tremendous honor to have him as a regular guest on this program. No one understands the nature of the Islamic religion and its consequence better than IQ Al-Rasuli. And the fact that he is willing to devote his time to educate us is not only an honor, but it's also a responsibility. My hope is that all who listen to him become ambassadors of the truth. You know, there is a consequence, according to Yahweh, that's God's one and only name, of ignorance. He calls it death and destruction. He says that ignorance equates to death and destruction. And I think our guest, IQ Al-Rasuli, would concur as it relates to Islam, that ignorance of Islam will lead to the deaths of countless people, already is, and the destruction of the world as we know it. What say you, IQ?
Agreed, 100%. I can't add more to that.
Yeah. Yeah, God's pretty smart. Later in this morning's program, we're going to talk about what he predicted relative to Damascus some 2,700 years ago and how it is all playing out exactly as he said it would in his prediction. But I would like to start in Cairo. Today in Cairo, at least five people were killed and 50 others were mutilated. And it appears that there's a mess now in Egypt that is essentially irresolvable. How do you view the situation in Egypt? I mean, let me just preface it by saying my view is that they tried fundamentalist Islam with Morsi. It was a complete and utter disaster for everyone. And now they're trying a military dictatorship, and they are even more deadly than was the government of Morsi, particularly in allowing fundamentalist Muslims to attack and kill Christians, and that there really is no answer between these two extremes.
It is very difficult to explain to European or American people that what we are dealing with is so evil, and it's ingrained in the books that they're reading. The human beings themselves are not evil. They're not born evil. They're indoctrinated to be evil. Muslims are indoctrinated to be evil from the day they are born to the day they are dead. What do I mean by that?
Yeah.
They have to hate anybody who's not a Muslim. They have no choice. Everybody who's not a Muslim is called a kafir, an infidel, an unbeliever, or kafirun in the plural.
Mm-hmm.
And kafirun, we are only beasts to be slaughtered. That is exactly what the Quran says. That is exactly what the Quran tells the followers of Muhammad. That those who do not believe in Muhammad as a prophet and in Allah as his God, then they are only beasts to be slaughtered. And that's what they're doing, but they're doing it to each other as well as to Christians, Jews, Buddhists, and Hindus. It is a vile cult belief system. If you want to call it a religion, I have no problem with that. Whatever you want to call it, it is hate mongering, war mongering, misogynist, duplicitous, disloyal, intolerant, and hence totally ungodly. Back to you, sir.
Yeah, there's two things that you mentioned there that I think are worth exploring. The first of those is that they're even killing one another. And the reason for that is the ninth surah of the Quran. In the ninth surah of the Quran, the Muslims by that time, that was the second to last surah revealed, that by that time, the Muslims had already overhunted their primary prey, which was their neighbors' caravans and Jews. They had raped all the Jewish women. They had enslaved all the Jewish children. They had robbed every Jewish home. There were no more Jews to ransack. And every Arab community within camel ride of Mecca and Yathrib, today's Medina, had been terrorized and robbed. And so they needed a new enemy. They needed a new foe to dehumanize, to rob, because that was the essence of the Islamic economy. And so the Ninth Surah tells Muslims, jihadist Muslims, that they are to slaughter non-jihadist Muslims so that Allah can take the peaceful Muslims and roast them forever in the hottest places of hell. So Islam at that very moment in the Ninth Surah announced to Muslims, jihadist fundamentalist Muslims, that a peaceful Muslim is their enemy. And so that is the basis of them killing one another, is it not?
That is, yes, because the Sunnis consider the Shia infidels, and the Shia consider the Sunnis infidels. So as the infidels, they have to destroy them, and that's exactly what they're doing.
But it's even beyond that. Of course, that's the civil war we're going to consider in a moment in Syria. But it's beyond that. For example, Saddam Hussein, while he was primarily a secularist, because he was not a devout fundamentalist Muslim, he was still, if he were to tell you what religion he was, he would still say, you know, he's a Muslim. Sisi, the head of the Egyptian army, who's now head of the Egyptian government, is a fundamentalist Muslim. He is absolutely a fundamentalist Muslim, but by the Muslim, and he's of the Sunni variety, but by the Muslim Brotherhood's standards, he's not a devout enough Muslim to impose Sharia law, and therefore devout fundamentalist Muslims, Salafs, see him as the enemy. So it's not just Muslims killing Muslims in a different sect, Shia and Sunni. It's Sunnis killing Sunnis, because some Sunnis don't view other Sunnis as Islamic enough. Isn't that true?
That is true. That is exactly what's happening in Egypt. And Sisi is moderate compared to a Salafist. But the word moderate is by the number of how many people he can slaughter before he's deposed. The worst thing that happened to humanity was Muhammad and his Quran. The worst. I mean, you and I will be repeating this for forever. Since after 2001, since 9/11, we've been repeating this again and again and again. You said you had 1,500 radio interviews and TV interviews. Yeah. So far, I had 670.
Yes.
And very few people are able to absorb the enormity of what we are telling them.
Yeah.
It's beyond their imagination. It really is.
Now, I want to challenge something that you said, I think more to make a clarification. Sisi is not a moderate. He is more moderate than our members of the Muslim Brotherhood. But he is not a moderate. When Sisi was being trained by the United States, in the United States, as a potential general for the Egyptian military, of which the United States provides the equipment, every survey of Sisi was to depict him as an absolute fundamentalist. He was chosen by Morsi, a fundamentalist, to head the military and to replace the generals who Morsi felt were too moderate. And so Sisi was chosen because he was the most fundamentalist of the generals available for Morsi to promote. So he was the favored general on a religious spectrum by the Muslim Brotherhood. So he isn't even remotely moderate. He is just ever so slightly more moderate than are the Salafs, which are the resolute fundamentalists. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but the question somebody would be asking us, why did he turn on them?
Yeah,
why
it
did
is.
He turn on Morsi? I mean, he was chosen by Morsi. He is a fundamentalist. Morsi was a fundamentalist. So why did he turn on him?
Yeah, there's a number of potential answers to that question, none of which are really germane, because his motivations don't change the reality that the country has gone from a military dictatorship to a fundamentalist Islamic government back to a military dictatorship. That's the reality. But there's a number of reasons that he would have done so. One is that the Egyptian economy under Morsi was an absolute shambles. It only survived because Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait provided billions of dollars. And Morsi, just before he was deposed by the military, said that he wanted to send the Egyptian military to engage in the Syrian civil war to fight and kill the Shia. And so the Egyptian military leaders knew that if they engaged and followed the directions of Morsi, that it would ultimately destroy them. And so I think those are the primary two reasons that he turned on the man that appointed him. Now, there is always the third reason in Islam. You and I know that there's only one difference between Shia and Sunni Islam. And that's who's in power, who's in charge. The religion's identical. Who's in power, who's in charge. And so when it comes down to Islam, where dictators are the order of the day, who's in charge matters. And if one person can elevate themselves above another, they're likely to do so, particularly when they're able to do so.
Mm-hmm. For the Shia, it's a matter of survival. What I mean by this is, when the Shia are under the Sunnis, the Shia are treated as garbage.
Mm-hmm.
When the Sunnis are under Shia, the Sunnis are treated as garbage. So there is no love between the two, ever.
Yeah.
It's never
been
since 1400 years ago.
Yeah, there's only one respite from Sunnis killing Shia and Shia killing Sunnis. And the only respite is when there is a ruthless dictator, typically a military dictator, that is residing over a country where there is a significant number of both Sunnis and Shias. And as was the case in Iraq, your country, under Saddam Hussein, while they did not get along, they were not killing each other. But you remove the military dictator from an Islamic country that is split among the two sects, and they become savages again. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion with IQ Al-Rasuli. He is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy his books at Amazon.com, and I would strongly encourage everyone to do so. IQ, at the end of our last segment, we actually talked about what has caused the Syrian civil war, and we've talked about what caused the horrific destruction that we have witnessed in your country, Iraq. America, stupidly, went in and deposed a secular dictator who had kept relative peace between the Sunnis and Shias in his divided country and replaced it with a Shiite government controlled by Tehran and then provided weapons to both sides. So why are we surprised that there is a civil war in Iraq and now in Syria?
I am not surprised. Americans are surprised. The world is surprised because they are ignorant. And as you said, God said ignorance is criminal.
Yeah. Well, he said it leads to death and destruction.
Correct. So that's criminality.
Yeah. The sad situation here is that this war that is ravaging your country was literally caused because America deposed the secular dictator, Saddam Hussein. I want to reemphasize, because it needs to be known, that Americans always think that they did a good thing by ousting Saddam Hussein because he was a genocidal murderer of his own people. And very few understand the situation of the Kurds and why he killed 3,000 Kurds in the village. Were the Kurds that he killed loyal citizens that were just unarmed and just trying to go about their lives? And Saddam Hussein woke up one day and he said, you know, I think for fun I'm going to use some poison gas and kill these people because, well, they're unarmed. It's going to be easy for me to do so. Is that the story? No, it wasn't.
According to the facts of the story, that these Kurds were joining and helping, aiding and abetting the enemy, Iran, against Iraq.
They were all wielding weapons, weren't they?
Yep.
And the weapons, the men were. And the weapons came from Iran, didn't they? And that not only did Iran recognize that the war, the Iran-Iraqi war, was a stalemate, and they were unable to make any inroads in the, they were embedded in the south but couldn't press forward towards Baghdad, that they came up, the Iranians came up with a strategy that if we arm the Kurds and get the Kurdi-Iraqis to form militia units to attack Baghdad and Saddam Hussein, then we might be able to make progress by having a fifth column, a group of Iraqis who are willing to war against Iraq. And that
I would like Americans to understand the Iranians didn't do it because they love the Kurds.
No, of course not.
They hate the Kurds because they have their own Kurdish problem. Mm-hmm. Turkey has its own Turkish problem. They did it because the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right. So they armed the Kurds, and the Kurds attacked Saddam Hussein, and they were successful. And in fact, Saddam's troops could not recapture the towns that they had attacked, and that the only way to successfully rid Iraq of what was now a very successful Iranian tactic was to deploy chemical weapons against the Kurds. By the way, who supplied those chemical weapons?
Europeans and Americans.
Right. So the black mark on Saddam, his primary black mark, which is that he gassed his own people, that really isn't true. That to take that point of view, you have to be completely ignorant of the facts.
Well, most people are ignorant of the facts. That's why they elected a person like Obama. I mean, twice they elected him. I'm saying it in passing because it's a fact of life. We are facing disaster. Humanity is facing a disaster. And we were going to discuss it last time about Iran and the nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And Americans are not waking up to the fact that it is a disaster. You know, do not interfere into the internal affairs of Muslims. On the contrary, if you want to stop Islam, you've got to give them a very hard lesson, similar to the lesson that the Muslims have given to the Americans on 9/11. We have to do a reverse one. I don't know if you understand.
I'm going to take a different point of view here. But first, I want to. We're at the commercial entry. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial, and I'm going to share first how it is now that Iran has become such a fierce enemy, and how they will soon become a nuclear opponent of Europe and the United States, directly related to the story of ousting Saddam Hussein, but also how we can give them a stern lesson. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. IQ ended the last segment by suggesting that the way to deal with Islam is to deal them a blow as significant as the blow that they dealt America of 9/11, where they flew planes into the World Trade Center, bringing them down, killing 3,000 people, and a plane into the Pentagon. One to fly one into the White House. They were symbolic targets. They were deadly. And I told IQ that I would provide my compromise on that position. We don't have many suicide bombers in the United States. We're not particularly keen on hijacking airplanes and flying them into buildings. And I don't think that you ever prevail by taking yourself down to the level of your enemy when your enemy is evil. But I do think there's three things we could have done in the wake of 9/11 that would have eliminated the threat of Islamic terrorism very quickly. And the first of those is I would have sent a symbolic message. I would have dropped leaflets over the Kaaba, which is the center of Islam in Mecca, where the black rock representing Allah exists, where they go on their pilgrimage, where they bow to every day that they're being fundamentalist Muslims. I would have dropped leaflets on it and said, you've got 30 minutes to get the hell out of here because we're going turn Mecca, the Kaaba, and the stone that is thought to be Allah into dust. And I would have absolutely obliterated the center of Mecca. And we've done that symbolically. You're going to bring down our buildings full of people. We're going to destroy your God. The second thing I would have done is I would have bluntly and boldly taken to the airways and told the truth, to use the Islamic Hadith and Quran to expose Islam for the most repulsive, the most deadly, the most destructive dogma that man has ever conceived. And what that would have done is had very little effect in the Islamic world, but it would have had a huge effect outside the Islamic world, and it would have had a huge tendency to dissuade would-be suicide bombers from acting out their religion in the West when they were exposed to the truth. And the third thing I would have done is I would have stopped the funding and the arming of Islam. I would have ceased selling any Muslim country American weapons, and I would have dissuaded other countries from selling the Islamic nation's weapons, and I would have seen to it that the Islamic fiefdoms could not fund fundamentalist Islam and Islamic terrorism through OPEC, and that would have been the place where America's military could have made a difference. So that's what I would have done. What would you do?
Well, you've done it all. I was thinking about obliterating Mecca.
Yeah.
All the time, but you preempted me.
Oh, okay. Sorry?
No, but I mean it. They destroyed the symbols of Western democracy and Western dominance in the economics. We should have done exactly the same thing to their system by destroying what is holiest to them, Mecca.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, there's two things we'd have to destroy to be effective. Mecca is one, that's the religious base. But there's a militant military base of Islam, a power base, and that's the almost exclusively through the deployment of American weapons. And so, and the fuel that runs Islamic terrorism, that funds Islamic terrorism, is OPEC. So if you hit economically, militarily, and religiously, it would have been a blow that that Islamic terrorism could not have survived.
In fact, Islam wouldn't survive.
Correct.
If you hit it all three ways,
correct,
Islam wouldn't survive. In fact, what you said about declaring the facts about Islam would obliterate Islam within a year.
Yes,
as a belief system, we're not discussing killing people.
Right.
As a belief system, it would become a laughingstock to every human being.
Right. And by the way, we have proof of that. And the proof of that is that when in the 1920s, when the KKK, Ku Klux Klan, was exposed and their internal documents were made public, it became impossible for them to retain members and to recruit new members, and they lost 97% of their members in 2 years. And I want to tell
because
you, Islam...
Because the facts were revealed. Exactly.
Right,
because
right.
The facts were revealed.
Right. And Islam is... Right. Islam is far more vulnerable to the truth than was the KKK.
This is exactly why Muslims want to shut up people like you, like me, and others who are telling the truth by either suing them to death financially or by massacring them.
Now, I want to take your thought one step further. By not doing what we have suggested, by not doing it. And by the way, this is not something that I'm saying here now or that you're saying here now after 10 years, 12 years after 9/11, 13 years after 9/11. I wrote this in Tea with Terrorists in the fall of 2001. The main character in Tea with Terrorists makes a presentation to the U.S. Congress, and he lays out exactly the same plan that I just articulated. So I wrote this and shared it with the American people 13 years ago. Now, the consequence of us not doing those things is that Islam will destroy the world as we know it. And
correct.
that billions of people are going to die because politicians and the media, the military, chose to accommodate Islam, to arm Islam, to fund Islam, to praise Islam, as opposed to act in a moral, responsible, and rational way. Against Islam.
We can't blame the military in a democracy. We only only blame the politicians who are the ones who are telling the military what to do. Even when the military are objecting, even when the military were telling Obama, don't do this and don't do that, he overruled them, even when they objected. So it's the politicians who are the guilty ones. Our politicians are guilty.
Yeah, I'm with you halfway there. Our politicians, like in America, George W. Bush, who made the decision to invade both Iraq and Afghanistan, both based on lies, making the world infinitely less safe for having done so, he bears more blame than does anyone in the world for the Iraqi civil war, for the Syrian civil war, acting as the catalyst that's going to start World War III. I agree. But I will never exonerate the military, because most of the military willingly supported this call to arms, because that's what they do. And I've studied the U.S. military relative to its engagement in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it has been a very evil, duplicitous, counterproductive, and dishonest institution.
This I cannot answer, because you have more knowledge about this subject than I have.
Yeah, but we are in agreement that the principal blame falls on the politicians who decided to deploy our military in a counterproductive way.
Yeah, no question about that one. As far as I'm concerned, 100% they're guilty of mass slaughter.
That is correct. We have Glenn on the line. I'd like Glenn to be able to ask you a question, IQ. Go ahead, Glenn.
Good morning, Anna. Good morning, IQ.
Good morning to you.
I originally called in when you were talking about the attack, you know, our attacking Iraq. And one of the things that always really struck me about our re-involvement in Iraq in 2003 was that after all the destruction that had been experienced in the 1990-1991 Iraq-Kuwait war and everything that went on there, the time between then and 2003, much of it was spent restoring much of the infrastructure of that country. And by the time they were attacked again in 2003, they had just christened a brand new initiated a brand new, I believe it was installed by the Chinese, a nationwide telephone system. They had a lot of infrastructure put back in place.
And we destroyed it.
You know, after all those years of putting everything back in place, brand spanking new, as horrible as Saddam Hussein was, the country's infrastructure was built up, similarly to some of the amazing things that were done with Libya's infrastructure and some of their programs.
Right.
And so we basically, this makes me think about the beast in Revelation, in Daniel's beast, I guess, that stomps things down and stomps the residue and it rises not up again. You know, there's no Marshall Plan for these countries. They're not restored. There's the way the European infrastructure was after World War II, the way the Japanese infrastructure was after Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yep.
They're just smacked down and stamped into the dust.
Yep. In fact, thank you, Glenn, for that those comments. Glenn's insight here falls in line, IQ, with something that that I think is important to recognize. Militaries are conceived to kill and to destroy. It's all militaries do. They destroy, they kill. And so we made a situation worse in Iraq and Afghanistan by destroying their infrastructure, by destroying their government, and by killing their people. There was nothing that could be gained by deploying a military in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Agreed. The question is, what do we do now?
Yeah. Well, what we should have done way back then is to tell Americans the truth about Islam and to deploy the plan that you and I have just discussed. But since our government is the problem, they're not just part of the problem; they are the problem.
Exactly, they are the problem.
Right. That all we can do is to do what we are doing and to encourage those who are listening, like Glenn. To recognize the true nature of this religion, to share it, to trumpet this message, because if more people wake up, then we can prolong our survival. As it is now, there is no hope for us as the free world surviving even as much as 20 years.
My question to you, I need your advice.
Sure.
I can understand Obama. 100% I understand him.
Yeah.
I say that not because of arrogance. I just understand him.
Yeah.
I understand.
He was taught, trained, educated in an Islamic country. I mean, he received an Islamic education, and then after that he received a socialist, secularist, politically correct education. And so he's easy to figure out. Not good. The more you know, the more you hate him. But he's easy to understand. So your question was going to be what?
Why are the Russians and the Chinese, who are nearer to Iran, helping Iran become nuclear? That I can't figure out.
Oh, when Shattering Myths continues, IQ, I will be glad to answer that question. It is a wonderful question, and its consequence is so important for us to understand. Because in Iraq, in Syria, in Iran, we have the world divided. Russia and China on one side, Europe and the United States on the other. It is going to be the match that lights World War III. The Shattering Myths, I'm your host, Yada. We have the foremost expert on Islam in the world as part of this discussion. The name is IQ Al-Rasuli. And IQ asked a question saying that he was wondering why China and Russia would not only ally with Iran, but would aid and abet the Iranian nuclear ambition. And the answer is fairly straightforward. It's just a touch more complicated in Russia than it is in China, but it's almost identical in both cases. In Russia's case, the Iranians were the primary supporters of the Chechen Muslims who were more vicious in Russia than they were in the United States. Russia has a much bigger problem with Islamic terrorists than Europeans and the United States does. And combined with the fact that Iran was doing this, Iran now has access to what is the largest natural gas and oil reserves in the world, but landlocked, the Caspian Sea. Most of the oil reserves are in the very southern part of the Caspian Sea, along the coast of northern Iran. And so the Russians and the Chinese are tormented by Muslims in the far southeast of their country as it borders Afghanistan, both made a deal with the Iranians that so long as they were given the pipeline rights to the oil and gas reserves in the Caspian Sea, they would ally with Iran. They would help Iran with its nuclear ambitions, and that Iran, in turn, would not only enrich them through pipeline access to the Caspian Sea oil and gas reserves, but also they would diminish their support of the Chechen Muslims in Russia, and I'm not even sure I can pronounce the names of the Muslims in China. It does begin with an X. It has too many consonants for my feeble tongue. But that's the answer.
But it's self-destructive. I mean, okay, in the short term, I agree with them. They have some resources coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But in the not too distant future, in 5 years' time, Iran with a nuclear weapon is a greatest threat to them, and she will not be afraid with a nuclear weapon from continuing the terror from Chechnya or in northwest China. So where is the gain? I can't see any gain in the future.
Because Iran and China are allies because of the mutual benefit associated with the oil and gas. For example, Russia just signed a deal that takes Iran, just by that one deal alone, back up to pre-sanctions levels of trade of gas, where they're trading Iranian gas from the Caspian Sea for Russian goods, mostly weapons. And it's in the multiple billions of dollars a day. It's an enormous trade arrangement. And the most expensive pipeline in the world is the one that the United States built for China, linking China to the Caspian Sea. These countries now are symbiotic. Their economies have become wholly dependent upon one another. It's just like China is never going to attack the United States because its economy is requires the United States as a customer. Iran's never going to deploy its nuclear weapons against Russia or China. because it requires the goods coming from Russia and China for its oil to survive. And so it's not going to deploy its weapons there, but it will deploy its weapons in Europe and the United States, and I don't believe they will do so in Israel, even though they talk about it. So the loser in this game is the United States and Europe, where there is a beneficial relationship, greedy as it might be, ultimately destructive to the world as it might be, between China, Russia, and Iran.
I hope you are wrong. But it sounds right. No, I'm not saying it. It is really, really... You cannot trust Shia Muslims. In fact, the whole concept of Taqiyya started with Shia Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Taqiyya is Islamic sanctioned subterfuge.
Right.
It started with the Shia Muslims.
Right.
So to trust Rouhani or Ayatollah Khamenei with anything is literally out of touch with reality.
Right. But, you know, Putin's the next communist. Communism, and so are the leaders in China. Communism is guided by Machiavelli, where the ends justify the means. It is a completely amoral and immoral philosophy. And so they aren't trustworthy either. And so you have a yoke of equally untrustworthy individuals and nations, but all temporarily benefiting one another. And the consequence, of course, is going to be lives of billions of people around the world, because this is leading to World War III, and it is unavoidable. Yeah, unavoidable. We'll be back.
Have a good day, sir.
Thank you, IQ. We'll be back after the news and commercial break.